The following podcast contains advertising. To access an ad-free version of the Lawfare podcast, become a material supporter of Lawfare at patreon.com/lawfare. That's patreon.com/lawfare. Also, check out Lawfare's other podcast offerings, Rational Security, Chatter, Lawfare No Bull, and The Aftermath.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Next issue is going to be whether the government had a warrant to conduct the search, and there's various exceptions that could be fact specific, but a warrant supported by probable cause. Now, I mean, in the way that this system is currently operated, where all of the content is automatically scanned, it's impossible to imagine a case where we'd be able to get a warrant to conduct this. So that's why if it were the government that were conducting the scanning and doing this to obtain information about people and possibly prosecute them, that would eventually lead most likely to the suppression of that evidence under the exclusionary rule.
I'm Alan Rosenstein, and this is the Lawfare Podcast, January 20th, 2021. Private entities, in particular, technology giants like internet service providers, email services, and social networks play a vital role in helping law enforcement fight child pornography online. But the involvement of private entities does not eliminate the Fourth Amendment issues that come with electronic surveillance. In fact, the more that private entities cooperate with the government, the more likely it is that courts will consider them government agents, and the evidence they collect will be subject to the same Fourth Amendment restrictions as applies to law enforcement agencies. Jeff Kossoff is an assistant professor at the United States Naval Academy's Cyber Science Department. As part of Lawfare's ongoing digital social contract research paper series, he published a paper entitled Online Service Providers and the Fight Against Child Exploitation, the Fourth Amendment Agency Dilemma. I spoke with Jeff about how the government and internet companies can thread the needle on fighting digital child exploitation without running afoul of the Constitution. It's the Lawfare Podcast, January 20th. Jeff Kossoff on the fight against online child pornography. So Jeff, let's start with some background context. When we talk about the issue of child exploitation on the internet, what are we referring to and what is the scope of this problem?
So it's a massive problem. And the New York Times actually did a very good series last year that documented how prevalent child sex abuse material is, particularly on platforms that are perhaps using private communications, but available to members of the public. And it's child sex abuse material that is exchanged at very rapid pace. And oftentimes it's the same images that are being exchanged again and again, to the point where law enforcement authorities and the National Center for Missing and Exploited Children know which images we might want to be looking for, and they can use automated means to do so. So of all the cyber issues that I deal with, this is by far the most devastating, and I see it as really one of the most urgent. So it's something that really nonprofits, the private sector, and the government have for well over a decade been really trying to address.
And so how are private entities in particular dealing with the problem of child pornography?
So for private entities, they have for well over a decade, they've used a variety of programs. Probably the most common one is known as PhotoDNA, but there are other ones as well that take known hash values. So a numerical value that represents the image or the video, and scan it against user content. and the hash values are of known child sex abuse material. And so I mean, all of the large platforms, their position is very firmly, you know, we do not want our services to be used for this, and we will be very proactive in scanning for this content to try to get it off of our services.
So let's talk a little bit more about the specific technique of hashing. I know there's often a lot of confusion about that. So when the platforms are doing this hash scanning, they're not matching images to images per se. They're taking the hashes, these kind of algorithmic signatures of the images, and comparing them to known hashes, known algorithmic signatures of other child pornography that has been identified. And so in such a way that these companies don't have to themselves traffic in the child exploitation material to be able to scan it. Is that roughly correct?
Exactly. So there are really multiple parts if you're trying of confirming whether something is child sex abuse material. This is just how the process typically works. The first is the actual hash scanning, which is automated. It's not looking at the actual image or video, it's scanning for these distinctive identifiers to be able to say, okay, with a very high degree of certainty, this image or video matches a hash value that is in this database that's provided to us by the National Center for Missing and Exploited Children. But that's not the end of the story. At some point after that, there has to be an actual review because, just to confirm whether, in fact, it's child sex abuse material. And that review, it really, it's changed over the years. And actually, in court filings, the government has not been entirely consistent as to who is always doing the review. In some cases, it's going to be the platform. An employee of the platform will view it. In other cases, won't be viewed by the platform. They get a hit and they automatically forward it on to the National Center for Missing and Exploited Children. And then NCMEC, which it's called, they will review it. Or in some cases, it might not be reviewed until NCMEC forwards that report on to law enforcement. So there are a variety of ways, but if we're looking at eventually prosecuting someone, at some point, a hash value match is not enough. The image does have to be reviewed.
So you've mentioned NCMEC now a couple of times. Can you walk us through what NCMEC is, who was created by, why it was created, and what it does on a day-to-day basis?
Yeah, so National Center for Missing and Exploited Children has a number of purposes to protect children. It's a nonprofit based in Virginia. And for the purposes of child sex abuse material online, they receive federal funding, and they're chartered by Congress in terms of what some of their missions are. But there's a federal statute that delegates an important role in the child sex abuse material prosecution and investigation process to NCMEC. It's a pretty interesting way that they do this. So what happens is, first up front, the service providers have no obligation whatsoever to search user content for child sex abuse material. The federal law actually explicitly says they don't have to, although many of them, most of them, depending on how you define them, most do. But if they do, and they do it through automated means typically, what happens is this federal statute gets triggered when the service provider receives actual knowledge of an apparent violation of federal child sex abuse material laws. And the general assumption is that if you get a hash value match, that's going to trigger this actual knowledge of an apparent violation standard. When that happens, there is a statutory duty for the online company, the platform, to file what's known as a cyber tip line report with NCMEC, which provides information about the content as well as the actual email or image or whatever the content is. And then NCMEC is charged. NCMEC can review it, but NCMEC basically is the next step where it then decides what law enforcement to contact and to forward it over to law enforcement. So the federal statute also provides the platforms with a fairly strong liability protection for any claims arising from their participation in this process. And it also says that NCMEC can provide the platforms with certain types of information, such as hash values, that help them scan for child sex abuse material.
So having now outlined the current regime for dealing with this kind of material on the internet, let's turn to the issue that your paper addresses head on, which is whether this current system is compatible with the Fourth Amendment. And so let's start by focusing just on the government's role here. So let's assume for a second that private entities weren't involved, right? And that there were no private companies here. It was just the government scanning for child exploitation content. What would the Fourth Amendment issues be? And just kind of walking through the basic Fourth Amendment analysis for those of our listeners who may be a little new to this.
So if it were just the government that were scanning for this content, and a question at the outset would be, do the individuals have a reasonable expectation of privacy in their, this is typically email, sometimes it's private cloud material. And that answer is, especially in light of precedent over the past decade, is going to be yes, that there is a reasonable expectation of privacy. So the Fourth Amendment does cover this material. It's different, and I want to make it clear we're talking about private content. If this were something that were posted open on social media or something like that, there's not going to be a reasonable expectation of privacy if it's publicly available. But that's going to be the question at the outset. And then the next issue is going to be whether the government had a warrant to conduct the search. And there's various exceptions that could be fact specific, but a warrant supported by probable cause. Now, I mean, in the way that this system is currently operated, where all of the content is automatically scanned, it's impossible to imagine a case where we'd be able to get a warrant to conduct this. So that's why if it were the government that were conducting the scanning and doing this to obtain information about people and possibly prosecute them, that would eventually lead most likely to the suppression of that evidence under the exclusionary rule.
So I just want to focus on the warrant issue just to clarify one point. So why exactly is it, just to be very clear about it, that the government wouldn't be able to get a warrant for doing the sort of, let's say, broad-scale automated scanning? I mean, presumably, warrants require probable cause, and we know that there's a lot of CSAM, this child exploitation material on the internet, right? We know from the New York Times reporting that there's a massive quantity, in fact, of this. So what's to stop the government from saying, look, we'd like a warrant, and the warrant is we'd like to scan this material because we think there's probable cause for there being CSAM?
Well, so if they were to say that for all users of an email service, or just to make sure I'm understanding your question correctly, I think that would definitely not satisfy requirements for being particular. And I mean, this gets to be a general warrant, which is something that we have the Fourth Amendment to not have. So, I mean, if it's right now, I mean, services like AOL and Google, they run these programs on a mass basis, not particularized to a particular account or particular exchange between two people where there might be evidence that could amount to probable cause. But for everyone, I struggle to see how the government would ever be able to get a warrant for a program on such a broad scale.
Yeah. And so in other words, under our sort of current legal understanding of how warrants work under the Fourth Amendment, it's not just enough for the government to say, look, we know that there's evidence of a crime that is being committed here, and this activity is going to find that evidence. It's that if in the process of that, you end up searching the information of a ton of innocent people, that doesn't satisfy probable cause. So just the way we've defined warrants, this just won't work.
Exactly. Okay.
So this then sort of tees up the problem that the government has with this sort of automated scanning that has proven to be the most useful way of dealing with the problem. But as we've just talked about, the vast majority of the initial scanning for child exploitation material is done by private companies. So can you clarify why it is that the Fourth Amendment, which only applies on its face, at least to government action, why is that even implicated here?
Well, so that's where we get into this really interesting question about who the Fourth Amendment, whose actions the Fourth Amendment restricts. So the Fourth Amendment clearly restricts the actions of law enforcement at the state, federal, or local level. That's not anything that's going to be controversial. That's how it is. It also, if I'm at my friend's house and I start rummaging through their things when they didn't give me permission to do that, I'm probably a bad friend. There might be, depending on the circumstances, there might be some civil liability issues, but I'm not violating the Fourth Amendment. I'm not behaving very well. But there's a middle ground between that, between sort of a purely private party like myself and a government entity like the local police. And that's government agent, which is a private party that has both motivations to help the government and also has at least been acting with some government encouragement, or at least government knowledge and acquiescence, as the case law says. And what's really kind of unsettled right now is, at what point do both private companies like an AOL or a Google become state agents or government agents? And at what point does NCMEC become a government agent? And so far, the online services, they've had some close calls. They've been able to manage to avoid the government agent designation, but we have had a few cases where NCMEC has been found to be a government agent. And in one case, written by then Judge Gorsuch, a government entity as well.
So let's talk about NCMEC first in this context, because I think that's a little more straightforward. So what is the argument, and whether it's then Judge Gorsuch's argument or just the current consensus, if there is one, what is the argument for NCMEC being a government entity or a state agent? And you know, is there even a difference in this context between those two, given that, as you pointed out, it is a nonprofit, right? It is not formally a government agency. It's not part of the Department of Justice, for example.
Yeah. So, I mean, what Judge Gorsuch did, and he was very certain about this in his reasoning, was he said, you look at the funding, you look at the congressional authorization for NCMEC, the requirements in statute for it to help prevent child sex abuse material. And he says, you know, this is effectively a government entity. And this was a really big change, because there had been concerns, and there had even been a district court ruling before that had found NCMEC to be a government agent. But he's saying, no, not only are they an agent of the government, but because of this funding and this authorization and these requirements, we're also going to find NCMEC to be like, just like law enforcement. And so that really threatened the underpinnings of this program that's existed for many years and has led to many prosecutions of people for child sex abuse material.
So assuming then that NCMEC and that courts, whether it's the Supreme Court or lower courts, continue to view NCMEC as essentially a government agency, right, as essentially a part of law enforcement, why isn't the fact that the screening is in most cases done by private companies, why doesn't that sort of solve the problem for law enforcement, right? As you point out in your paper, under this thing called the private search doctrine, and as you just said, right, if you go to your friend's house and you rifle through their papers and you discover some incriminating evidence, and then you give that to the police can then use that evidence as part of their additional investigation. So why is it that if Facebook decides or Google decides to, you know, rifle through my digital papers, as it were, and find some contraband, why can't they give that to the government, whether it's to law enforcement or to NCMEC? And then why can't the government just use that to get a warrant and to prosecute me or something like that?
Well, so that gets into a really interesting question, and the courts haven't really settled this as to when the private search doctrine applies. So as you said, I mean, if the government basically just looks at materials that have been already been searched and provided to it by a private entity that's not a government agent, then that there's not going to be a reasonable expectation of privacy in that material. But the what it also says for the private search doctrine is that that doesn't apply if the government has expanded on that search. That raises some interesting questions that the courts are just starting to sort out. So, for example, there have been some cases where the private actor, and the courts have found that the platforms are private actors, they've found that they did automated hash scanning and then provided the image to NCMEC, and then NCMEC or law enforcement opened the image. And the courts have kind of been mixed and haven't fully sorted out whether an image that's been provided but not reviewed by the platform can then be opened without expanding the private search. We've had some mixed rulings on that. What we found is there's a bit more certainty in terms of the private search doctrine applying if the platform has an employee who actually reviews the image before providing it to NCMEC and then effectively to law enforcement. That's going to make it more likely that the private search doctrine applies, but that raises what I really talk about in my paper as really being a conflict with the goals of the entire government agency finding, in that, as I had said earlier, to be a government agent, the court looks at a variety of factors, but most importantly, what was the intent of the private party and what degree of control or knowledge did the government have? And now if let's say you're an online service provider and you have photo DNA, you get an automated match and you provide it to NCMEC and they open the image. You can make, and there have been a lot of cases where this case has been made, that the private company was purely trying to protect its users and prevent this material from being on its services by using automated scanning. And then once it got a match, it has actual knowledge of an apparent violation, has to send it to NCMEC. And the courts have been generally fairly accepting of that. But if you add the step of having an employee manually review this image, that gets a little trickier because there's not as much of a justification for why your employees are going to be reviewing these images. I mean, I guess you perhaps could say, well, we want to have absolute certainty before we kick someone off and forward their information to law enforcement. So perhaps that could be a reason. But what it also looks like is that there's more of an effort by the platform to have the private search doctrine apply. And that's where you start thinking, okay, well, then what really was the motivation of the private entity? And I mean, it makes me, so that there was a case very recently, and I talked about this in the paper. I was reading through the transcript of the motion to suppress hearing in the district court involving prosecution that was obtained through a photo DNA hit. And the defense lawyer, he said, in every other context, Google, NCMEC, and law enforcement openly celebrate their working together until you've set foot in a courtroom once a defense attorney mentions the Fourth Amendment. And then there are like three guys who just got pulled over in a car and are separated and claim not to know each other. And that's the problem that we have. And I mean, in some ways, and this is what I get to more broadly and what I've written about before as well, is that this focus on the subjective intent of the company is pretty misplaced, and it makes solutions like this more difficult, while I don't think it even addresses many of the Fourth Amendment concerns. Now, I think a better way, a better framework for determining whether a company or a private party is a government agent for Fourth Amendment purposes would be to focus on what level of control did the government have over the search. And that's one of the factors. But when you look at the cases, especially in the NCMEC cases that have decided the issue, they focus on, you know, did AOL or did Google intend to help law enforcement? And they usually have testimony from a representative who says, We do this for our business interests. And when you're talking about a company as large as Google, for example, it's very difficult to say, well, what was Google's intent? I mean, sure, they want to keep this off their services, but they also, I mean, to say that they have no interest in working with law enforcement is perhaps belied by the fact that there are steps that help the private search doctrine to work. So it's a very difficult balancing act that they have here. And I think that what we're seeing is courts are becoming more and more willing to question, do we really have these independent private companies doing this? Or is there a link between the government and the company's actions?
So if I could try to sort of summarize this dilemma that you're describing, it seems like on the one hand, if the companies do the kind of the bare minimum to screen their platforms for this stuff, so all they do is screen their platforms for hashes of known child sex abuse material, and then they just send a notification to NCMEC or law enforcement or whomever, and then law enforcement picks up the trail at that point, then in that case, the worry is that law enforcement will have gone beyond what the private companies did and therefore will have violated the Fourth Amendment that way. But if on the other hand, the companies do a lot of law enforcement's work for it, if they open the files, figure out the email addresses, figure out all the useful metadata, and then forward all of that to law enforcement, then the concern is that the companies aren't acting as companies so much as adjuncts of law enforcement. And so you end up having the Fourth Amendment violated another way. So there's this very narrow band of permissible activity before you end up violating the Fourth Amendment one way or the other.
Yeah, that's exactly right. And I think that you really, I mean, in the first days, and again, these sorts of cases have been going on now for over a decade. In the early cases, the challenges, you had criminal defense attorneys raising the challenges, but the courts were pretty quick to reject them. And what you've seen now is both more scrutiny by courts of these cases, particularly with NCMEC's role, but also with the companies. And you're also seeing more intricate systems in terms of having the manual review being done by the companies. The record in the cases is a little vague. In one of the cases, the government said because of Ackerman, NCMEC will, which is the Gorsuch case, that NCMEC will only review images that have either been opened by the company or are publicly available. And there was some pushback from the defense attorney of examples where that might not have necessarily happened since Ackerman. So it's a little, we don't know precisely what's happening, but at least based on what the United States government has represented in court papers, is that they're trying to move toward more of a system where the review happens earlier in the process rather than later.
So let's now talk about the next steps, right? We've identified this potential problem with the current regime, but obviously the issue of child exploitation material isn't going away, and a world in which we simply don't scan for this and we don't prosecute this is kind of intolerable, and presumably that's not what anyone wants. So one option, it seems to me, is for the government, when it receives just a notification from a company that some hash match has been made, why can't at that point the government then go to a judge and get a warrant? And when the judge asks for probable cause, the government just says, well, we got a notification from Google that for this individual, their account was flagged because one of these hashes matched. Now, we haven't opened any emails. We don't know anything about the person, or we don't know anything about the potential image, but we have this hash match. So why can't the government just get probable cause warrants that way?
So I think that's a very realistic way of approaching this. I think that there might be pushback from defense attorneys saying that a hash match is not sufficient for probable cause. I would disagree with that. I think there are cases in the non-child sex abuse material realm that would suggest otherwise. But I think that's a good option. I think that obviously the downside from a law enforcement perspective would be the additional administrative tasks of preparing the affidavit, getting the warrant and so forth. But I think that actually, I mean, depending on how the case law sorts out over the next few years, I think that might become something that ends up having to happen. I think another option possibly, and this is something that also has not really been sorted out very well by the courts. There have only been a few cases that have addressed this, is if we get to a world where the service providers are starting to become deemed as government agents, there's been some argument by the government that, well, they have in their terms of service something that says we can monitor and disclose information for law enforcement purposes. And so that's effectively consent. We've had mixed rulings in that, but judges have made it clear, you know, you have to be, this isn't just sort of like an arbitration clause. This is waiving your Fourth Amendment rights. And you need to make this very clear what you're doing, why you're doing it. And I think there might be some legitimate business concerns about that for the companies. So that, I mean, that would be another option as well.
What about dispensing with the warrant requirement entirely, right? So the Fourth Amendment divided into these two parts. The first part talks about how searches and seizures must be reasonable. And then the other part talks about how if the government wants a warrant, it has to establish probable cause. But the Supreme Court has pointed out that there are circumstances in which the government can engage in a search without a warrant, without probable cause even, but the search is still deemed reasonable for a variety of reasons. It's often connected to the severity of the problem the government is trying to solve or deal with, and also the fact that getting a warrant would be impracticable for one reason or the other. This happens a lot in the national security context. So do you think that there is a possibility for courts to at some point say, look, all of this, you know, companies searching and then governments getting it and the NCBIC being involved, that's all very cute. But at the end of the day, it's obvious that this is all just one big law enforcement scheme to stop child pornography and that probable cause is not being met here. But at the same time, child pornography is such a problem and its unique features make it not amenable to probable cause-based warrants that we're just going to say, look, these are searches and seizures under the Fourth Amendment. They're not with probable cause. They don't have warrants, but they're reasonable because that's what we need them to be.
Yeah. So I think that argument, when you look at the totality of the circumstances for reasonableness, I think obviously the problem looking to be solved is very important, significant, very, very substantial. But I think when you balance that against the privacy concerns, I think that's where it's going to start to get tricky because on one hand, you might say, well, it's just hash matching. It's not, as long as you're not reviewing all content, perhaps this is like a binary search, which is kind of a separate issue. But on the other hand, it's automatic scanning of everything for every user. And so if you position it like that, I don't know how you convince judges, and now, I mean, eventually, I think if that were to be the case, I think it would go to the Supreme Court. I don't know how you convince now Justice Gorsuch that this is something that's not subject to the warrant requirement.
So in either way, you have a lot of these weighty issues on both sides, and I'm sure that we're going to see more of these issues come up in the years to come. Jeff, I want to thank you for joining me on this podcast and also for writing the terrific paper that really sheds a lot of light on this difficult and important problem.
Thanks so much.
The Lawfare Podcast is produced in cooperation with the Brookings Institution. If you've liked what you've heard, please take a moment to rate the podcast or let someone know so they can enjoy it as well. The podcast is produced by Jen Patya Howell. Zachary Frank of Goat Rodeo is our audio engineer, and Sophia Yan performed our music. As always, thanks for listening.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.